Hello, can you hear me? Ah, wonderful, I thought we would start. My suspicion is that Alex Lanson, you know, is just too good, you know? And I'd be there myself if it weren't for this, so I completely understand. Anyway, great to have you. Thank you for coming. So this is what I'm going to say. Let me not say it. Perfect. You'll notice I'm using this very trendy remote control over here, you know, where you press the buttons and it does, you know, does the switching, which is kind of cool, right? Long promised and actually working now, which is even better. So I'd just like to talk about LibreOffice generally, lots of different things about it. In this case, I previously had a whole load of slides saying basically this, but I'm just going to cut them down to one because it seems like a better idea, you know. Here's the punchline. Carl Fogel wrote a great book on how to do open source software for lamers, you know. I imagine that most of the people here do it by getting involved in a community and just feeling it, right? You know, that's how it's done, right? You immerse yourself. But if you're a very structured type of person and you don't know anything about open source, what you do is you buy Carl's book and you read it, and it's almost as good. So anyway, and recently he tried this out, and he says, you know, now it's ridiculously easy to build. So thanks to the great work done by all sorts of people, including David. Are you David? Aha, awesome. This is David. David Todden, the man who's never been seen, you know. So we have actually seen him, and it's worth coming to Brno just for that. So great work there. And the Red Hat team, in fact, are all here, which is dead exciting. So not that they're actually in this room, but you can shake them by the hand later for the good work they do. So culturally, we love people to contribute changes. We like changes. We want, you know, people to get stuff in and improve the suite. It really needs it, so. Here we go. And there's some good people to hack with. You know, if you want a diverse community that's large and growing and fun and full of volunteers and also with some backup of, you know, corporate heavy lifting and so on, we're doing pretty well. We're pretty encouraged by that. So, the other thing is that people find the code base intimidatingly large and horribly problematic. You know, you can build it, but now you have to get into it. So recently, several things have happened. One is that David and Peter have helped me build a graph of all of our dependencies. And there are various ways you can slice and dice this so it actually starts to make sense. You know, so we get the 200 modules and we cut them down to the ones that matter, and we actually start to see something that you can actually understand and remember. And I've built some slideware around this to do some training for various people coming into the project that's quite useful and goes through the module structures and also some of the basic types and string types and window types and so on. Just a bit of the design at the lower level, so you can hopefully piece things together and make more sense of it. And hey, look at them. They're all fun, right? You know, they're good to work with, and it's great. Another thing that's reasonably encouraging is that recently we've had even more companies and organizations wanting to join and support LibreOffice. So we're particularly pleased to see AMD and Intel, which is kind of good, you know? We have the FSF and SPI, which is good. We don't have OSI yet, but, you know, maybe... Well, they were both in our press release anyway, OSI and the FSF. So we like, you know, to get those polls there. Either way, who else have joined? The French government's interministerial groupings have joined, which is great. The Saudi Arabian government has a research institute called CAXT, and they've joined, which is great. Lenido, of course, and well, maybe some of these are more familiar from previous times. So we're pretty encouraged. I read my slides from last year, and I realized that there were a whole load of things that were in 4.0 that we didn't mention back then, because we were still at 3.6 at that stage. So here are some nice new things in 4.0. One is Visio import, so not only all versions of Visio ever released that we're aware of, can we do, you know, a reasonable job of importing stuff, but we can now get the stencils out as well, so that, you know, you can start to reproduce these drawings nice and faithfully. This is particularly cool. If you've ever wondered why computing, taught in schools, I don't know, have people seen computing taught to children these days? So computing, unfortunately, at least in the UK, has been debased to a word processing, spreadsheet using type course, you know? So I have done computing. I can now type a document and copy some clip art into it. Isn't that great? You know, I am now a software engineer. And so there are lots of efforts to try and solve this. One of our one is here, which is, you know, to put logo inside the word processor. You know, so you start off with all these bad intentions of teaching people word processing, and accidentally you might even be able to teach them a simple programming language, which is quite fun. And it produces pretty pictures, as you can see. This is all drawn with logo on the left, which is kind of nice.
There are even books that help you, make a showing of this in your classroom and so on, which are kind of good.
Here's some of the things the CACS guys have been doing, getting the right-to-left support right or left, you know. So quite a lot of these were pretty embarrassing bugs. So, you know, if you're in right-to-left mode and you had an early embedded object, like a chart or something, and you would click on it, when you started to move it, you know, if you tried to move it right, it would move left and vice versa. You know, all of those good fun stuff. And so there's quite a lot of this that's been nailed, which is an improvement, getting the presenter view to actually work, and a number of other such things. So it's great to have, you know, quite a large team of people there doing useful work in an area that's perhaps not familiar to most of us. Gratuitous graphical bling for no reason. Look at that. Isn't it great? And a customer wanted it. You noticed the silly birds at the top of the screen. I don't know if my mouse is... No, it's not going to work. But anyway, you see the birds. They're all important. It's a productivity-enhancing measure, you know. It has been conclusively proved that birds, you know, improve. Anyway, so what else have we done? Lots of work on interoperability, improving that. I guess it's kind of grind work that is often not seen. But sometimes it actually has features in the core as well. So previously, comments were focused on a single point in the document. And usually people want to comment a range of text. Pretty much what happens. The problem is we couldn't represent that in our model at all, and we couldn't render it either. And so typically when you would import a document with comments in it, we would flatten all this to a single point, export it, people would be unhappy, blah. So now we do the right thing. We render it, and we interoperate much better, which is great. This is a random interjection, just so you know, I get bored. So hybrid PDFs are cool. Who has used a hybrid PDF? I have used a hybrid PDF. See? Who hasn't used a hybrid PDF? Okay, so there is an apathy problem, but we'll break through that, you know. Perfect. Well, so at least half of you then, we could perhaps help. So a hybrid PDF is really easy to use. Let me try and show you how to use it. It's actually just one checkbox, so let me go export this as PDF. And this guy here, which you can't see, let me try putting this over there. So this is the PDF export dialog. And when you click export at the bottom, it makes a PDF. That's great, isn't it? But there's a checkbox up here. And when you do it, it shoves your ODF document inside your PDF in a sort of magic meta stream on the side. So that's kind of cool. So if you want to load it and edit it, you get a full fidelity document, which is great. And otherwise, if you're a lamer and you don't have LibreOffice, you can just see the PDF, which is, you know, that's kind of second best. But at least it looks like it should, you know, and life is good. So that's one kind of cool thing that not enough people know about. There's another kind of cool thing that not enough people know about. Let me try and show you that as well. So if I create a spreadsheet, I have this wonderful feeling that everything's going to go horribly wrong. Perfect. So I like spreadsheets. So let's have a thing here that says hello and world. And typing should not be done in public. Ooh, it actually worked. So when we save that, what we can choose is flat ODF. So if we do temp, we could have a foo ODF like that. But if we put a little F in front of it, pa, like that. We get a magic file. That's even one already there. Some idiot is testing his demos. That's just terrible. It ruins all the fun, you know? It's like practicing at sport. It's just not on. You know? David Beckham does it all the time, I hear. You know, it's just not sporting. Anyway, there we go. Right, so then if we open that, if we can remember where it was. Perfect, we see absolutely nothing. Why is that? What happened? Anyone that's able to tell me, get surprised. It's on the wrong desktop. No, it is on the right desktop. It's a miracle of multi-monitor. Okay, I'm going to use Emacs because I like Emacs. And it doesn't poo on me when I'm not looking. So, aha, perfect. So this is that file, and you'll notice inside it, there is all this beautiful XML. This is all this XML anyway. And when you get, there's a whole load of configuration options which are of no meaning or use to anyone. But at the bottom you see hello world, hopefully in 1 and 2 there. Do you see that in the middle? Slightly, you know, the pretty printing helps. And so this is really cool, and it's really cool because, two reasons. The first thing is that you can whack anything you like in there. Pretty much a whole ODF file, you know, can be represented this way. Your image is Base64 encoded. But the second thing that's cool is that it's really fast. It's as fast as the zip file. Arguably, it could be faster. Yeah, it depends how much base 64 encoding you need to do. So you can write a little script, a little Perl script, a little web tool, a little whatever, just printf a whole load of this stuff, and then you get a beautiful, beautiful document out the other end.
So that has to be good, right? That's my brief musical interlude on hybrid PDFs. I discovered at the last minute it was actually in my abstract, so I thought I ought to say something about it,
which I just did. Perfect. Is this working? No, I have to now switch back to something else. Let me go down. Uh-huh. This presenter console is pretty odd. I can see the next slide here, but it's not updating. Ah, perfect. It's just very slow. I wonder why. I should profile that. Okay, perfect. So we are back here. LibreOffice 4.1. So that was 4.0. That was really old, boring stuff. I'm sorry about that, but you needed to see it. 4.1 has just been released. So 4.1 is the bee's knees. It is so brilliant that we're still ironing the bugs out of it. But 4.1.1 will be even better. And one of the cool things here is the font embedding. So for many years, we've had a brilliant explanation anytime. It's not an excuse, by the way. It's an explanation. There's an important semantic difference there that is often lost on pointy-haired managers. Anyhow, we had an important explanation when the document looks absolutely nothing like it looks in Microsoft Office. What we typically say is, well, it's a font issue like this, and we wave our hands and it covers all manners of evils. You know, the fonts were different, right? Unfortunately, there is now a way to embed those fonts in the document. So this explanation is going to run out of mileage. So it's exactly the same fonts on either side. And there's some degree of subsetting craziness that's going on there. And there's also some elite copy protection that Microsoft has implemented here. And it's something else, you know, honestly. And so you take a whole load of fonts and you embed them in a zip file, effectively. How do you stop people just unzipping the zip file and taking the fonts, right? Because that would be bad, right? You know, like copying things. Unauthorized copying has to be bad, right? So, here's the solution. What you do is you nail the first 4 bytes of the file and you put zeros over them so that it's no longer a true type font. It's missing a magic number at the beginning, okay? It's really secure, as you can see. Anyway, so either way, there are whole loads of files out there with true type fonts with zeros in them at the beginning. And if anyone wants to write a circumvention tool in 4 lines of C and get, you know, sort of locked away for it, they're most welcome. So there you go. What else do we have? Photo album deck building. Oh, this is nice. So, the world has a problem, which is fundamentally a marketing problem. It's critical when you take a picture of me, for example, that you take it in the highest resolution possible, you know, preferably like 10 gigapixel, something like that, because then you can see every single flaw in my face as opposed to, you know, just most of them. Camera manufacturers everywhere know this, and so every year the phone, you know, increases in gigapixelage and it takes ever longer to view the thumbnails because the blinking thing is, you know, got a GPU trying to scale it down to the, you know, half a megapixel screen you have. But this aside, when you've got loads of gigabyte images, what you really want to do is you want to create a photo album presentation, you know, which replaces those. Does anyone remember when we used to have sort of gelatin squares that you put in a box that shined a light through them? And, you know, that you saw it on the wall, maybe? Either way, the modern equivalent of that is a PowerPoint presentation, which is, you know, 30 gigabytes small, packed full of massive images. And we can make that easy too. So that's brilliant. And the world would be better. And you'll notice that this is a 1 megapixel screen, if that. So there you go. We can spend lots of time interpolating them down. Another problem we've had that's pretty irritating for years is that we couldn't rotate images. So, you know, if you import your picture having got the EXIF information screwed up or the rotation of it wrong, we're doomed forever to be that orientation. And so now we can rotate it by 90 degrees, which really, really helps. You can do that twice if you want, I guess. Anyway, perfect. So this is a major usability win. And I want to use this not just to point out what a major usability win it is, but also that you could have done that. Any one of you in this room, you know, could have implemented this feature given enough time and trying and effort, right? You know, and got the glory. You know, it could be your name there instead of, now I don't know how to pronounce that. He's Hungarian. I'm going to go Tomás. Is it anyway, maybe I'll find a Hungarian later. But Thomas did a really good job, right? That's awesome. Lots of people will thank him. And one of the reasons, interestingly, is just this: the perfect is the enemy of the good. Anyone sits down, looks at this problem, goes, but I want to do arbitrary rotations with, you know, strange things around it and text flow around it, and so nothing ever happened. But now at least you can rotate your pictures, which is nice. So step line scatter charting, which is nice from Eric. Just little features around the place. And I can't show you all the features that we have in 4.1. Clearly, it would take too long, and many of them aren't graphical. But yeah, I'll just show you a few. Here's a round of really key features. So if you like ODF and open document formats, we're dragging a whole load of dingy documents from the distant past into ODF. So if you used Microsoft Word for Mac 5.1, you know, we can get your one-bit images in, finally, into ODF. Oh, well, that looks totally different. Either way, I've screwed that up somehow. Try that one. Okay, perfect. Mac Write Pro 1.5. So, you know, skiers looking good. Apple Work 6. Wonderful, isn't it? All of this good stuff moving into ODF land, which is fun. We even have a sidebar originally from IBM Symfony many, many years ago, which has been finally contributed and included, which is kind of cool, and some pretty gallery clip art that goes with it, and some moving of existing pieces to make them more accessible and easy to find, I suppose. Accessible is kind of an overloaded word these days. It's experimental because it's, well, if you turn it on, you start to find some interesting crashes around the place. But anyway, you can turn it on with this enable experimental sidebar feature. Another good news is that the base component has been the unloved, you know, stepchild of the project for a long time. And it's got significantly worse in recent times as Java has got slower at running native code. And we've got some good news coming there, but either way, there are some more features going into it now. So a whole load of limit fixes. Lionel is doing nanosecond timestamp stuff with Stefan's help and all sorts of good things going on in base. And loads of other stuff. You know, GStreamer 1.0 support. Unless we say about GStreamer 1.0, the safer everyone is. Loads of bug fixes. A number of them from Apache. 10,000 commits, which is kind of good, you know, commit early, commit often, and so on. Lots of incremental interop wins that are too tedious to see individually. I like this as a little UI thing, you know, this Firefox-like search bar, you know, with incremental search at the bottom where you expect it, hides when you don't want it, isn't a huge dialogue that obscures your document. It's kind of nice, and again, volunteers there mucking in and doing good stuff. So that's what actually exists as of today. We're going to go into the Star Trek future of what I hate. It's not a Star Trek future. We're going to try and gaze into a crystal. I don't like crystal balls either. Anyway, this might be what happens. So lots of great work going on in Google Summer of Code, which is a good way to see what's going on. So VLC integration. I mean, it turns out that despite integrating at the same time with GStreamer 0.10 and 1.0, we can do both concurrently. And we should do VLC as well. Because on Windows, it turns out, there's better codec support in VLC than there is in the operating system. So it's a waste of time fiddling with the operating system because it's not going to be able to play your insert file format of the day. Whereas VLC inevitably will because it's this giant lump of stuff that works. And the same is true on Mac. So we're hoping to improve things there. For example, a banal example would be OGG support. I don't know if Windows Media Framework plays OGG videos or WebM videos or anything like that out of the box. My suspicion is no, which is really lame. But of course, if you have VLC installed, as a million people a day do install it, interestingly, then it's, you know, life is good. So hey, Firebird database. Perfect. Yeah, so I mentioned the Java problems. There's a student working now, Andre Hunt, to replace our default embedded database, which should give a massive performance improvement for local databases, which is really cool. LibCMS connector I'll talk about here. In a minute. Oh, the Android remote is being completely rewritten and improved in so many ways that it didn't actually work for me at all when I tried to test it earlier. So I spent a few minutes trying to debug it. But by the time you get it, it will be fine. If you download this from the Play Store, this version works with what's there today. But either way, as you can see, it looks different and prettier. I talked about CMIS integration. There is this library, libcmis. I'll talk about it a bit more in a minute. But either way, Google Drive integration built in to LibreOffice, which is kind of nice. An iOS remote control, so to mirror the Android thing, we should, maybe we should prop up the awful proprietary world of Apple And you know, so there's a Google Summer Code student doing that, which is kind of cool too, if you have one of those things. Oh, there is some other stuff going on here too. So Calc, for a long time, has had scalability problems. With a vengeance, really. And so Kohei has been working pretty aggressively on fixing the internal data structures of Calc, which, yeah, were written very quickly, I suspect, and then optimized, but not, you know, got right in structural terms. And so this should really bring a lot of performance improvements, much reduced memory size. And if you happen to have a GPU that's OpenCL compatible, and of course if you have an AMD one, that's really awesome, then hopefully it'll give you an amazing speed boost for large and complicated spreadsheets, because we start to calculate the spreadsheet on the GPU wherever we can, which is kind of cool. So Kohei is doing that, and MultiCoreWare, both funded by AMD, which is awesome. And here's just a picture of how it worked. So if you're an object-oriented guru, I think you have to say object-oriented. The clueless people say object-orientated, as I understand. You know, so it's important you know that. Either way, if you're object-oriented type person, you sit down and you look at a spreadsheet and you think, what's the object? You know, where are the objects? And so you create the cell as the object, because like, it seems like there's a whole load of them around, so we should have an object for that. And this turns out to be the worst possible design decision for making a large scalable spreadsheet in the long run. And the problem is that when you've made this design decision, it spreads all over the code. So every other piece of code, like the chart engine knows about cells, conditional formatting, you know, all of the file filters know about cells. This concept goes very deeply into the code. And if you want to get rid of it, it's pretty bad. So anyway, Kohei's refactoring basically did, I think, this. So now nothing in the code knows about it, which is kind of cool. It's just embedded in this core document model. And of course, there's some iterators that are efficient that will move around it, but just a massive cleanup to all of that code, which is kind of awesome. And so, yeah, so there are a whole load of knock-on things there. Currently, if you have a whole column full of the same formula, or broadly the same formula, you know, this will be duplicated many times in memory, one for each entry. And this is a really lame way to waste memory, and a lame way to make everything slower as you walk over it. So we're fixing, Kohei's currently fixing that and making some great progress too. So that's cool. It's the biggest cleanup of the Calc core, I would argue, in a decade or so. Is that fair, Iker?
Yeah.
Woohoo! Iker is the Red Hat Calc guru, so give him a big hand. You know, look at him, he's wonderful. You know. So, yeah, perfect. So anyhow, that's LibreOffice. I've talked about LibreOffice at great length, so let's talk about GNOME a bit more, which is all good. So LibreOffice and GNOME. So there are several things that we do with GNOME. The first thing, I guess, is schedule synchronization. We release at the same time. The reason is pretty obvious, I suppose, that you know, GNOME is going to release, all these distros are going to release the stuff. We want to get the latest, greatest features to the users. So, well, we synchronize, which is kind of cool. Yes, synchronization, excellent. So we also use lots of GNOME technologies. So there are things like GNOME VFS, you know. It's a great technology, isn't it? I remember Ettore Perazzoli, you know, designing it all those years ago and sitting down, and it was, at the time, the most awesome thing you can ever imagine. And it also used Corba between different threads to, yeah, anyway. It got a lot better over the years, I tell you, but even so, unfortunately, we're still integrating with it. I forget why. I think probably on very old systems. Actually, I knew the reason. On very old systems that we have to compile on anything, there is GIO. Is that right, Quinn? Or have we updated the systems now?
Yeah.
Right, so we have to build on RHEL 5. If it isn't on RHEL 5 or doesn't build on RHEL 5 or has stupid dependencies that mean you'd have to upgrade the whole of RHEL 5 to make it even compile, then we don't compile against it, at least in our generic Linux builds. Of course, the vast majority of people get this from their distro vendor and they just install their package and they get GIO support because it's built again and again and again and again and again, one for each version of every operating system you have, right? When I say operating system, I mean Linux version, whatever, Linux distribution. Either way, we do both, which is great. We have gconf support, another victory. Anyone who wants to port dconf, you know, or fiddle with that, it's more than welcome. How hard can it be? You know, we need a glory hound here, you know. Dbus, so we use dbus for several things, actually, holding off a screensaver, some menu bits. Evolution, we have a wonderful switch statement in Evolution that DL opens libraries in turn. Hello, sir, speak. Yeah, go for it. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Well, well, reopen it from me with a patch, you know, of your own, and then it'll be fine, you know? Ah, dconf is not available on RHEL 5. Okay, perfect. Awesome. I would point out that RHEL 5 is the radical new base version, not the RHEL 4 that we were compiling on until 4.0. Is that right? I think 4.0, you know, like 6 months ago, we took a radical step of updating to RHEL 5. So anyway, at least the resulting binary actually runs on all Linuxes, which is good. So yeah, but that bug shouldn't be, I don't know, I have to read the bug. You know, there are various ways to get your bug count down, you know. One is to redefine them as features or enhancements. I don't know. I mean, this is obviously an enterprising triager of some kind, but I need to read that. But seriously, the patch is... you closed it. Oh, perfect. Perfect. Either way, send a patch. You can't argue with that, right? So evolution, we, you know, DL open all of these ABI changed libraries and grope about in them to get stuff out, which is kind of good. It's a bit of a bullet point. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone actually use that in anger. I don't know. I mean, it normally works when we test it, but yeah. So of course we use GTK pretty deeply. All of our windows are GTK windows underneath. You know, they may look like VCL windows on top, but deep down, you know, they are GTK windows, which is great. And of course, we use the glib main loop inside. It's pretty good. It would be nice to have a more glib main loop-like main loop on top of it, so we could do more cool stuff like prioritizing events and idle timers and so on. GTK file selector, of course. Hopefully, people notice that. GTK print integration, which is one of those sort of on and off. You know, is it ready? Is it not? Okay. We gave up. Right, so maybe one day there will be a redesign of the GTK print dialog and then we'll integrate with it again. But I think, David, was it you that wrote the beautiful integration? Was it Quailon or? I don't know. There's someone clever that did a lot of work there. And it's it would be nice to have. We're using half-buzz now. I discovered this last night along the lines of, that's a crazy thing we shoved in without telling anyone to see if it would go wrong. And apparently it hasn't yet, so that's good. Telepathy, we have a telepathy abstraction. If you configure in just such a way, you can use that, which is kind of fun. Oh, and look at that. Isn't that good? This is Quailon's contribution as of only a few weeks ago. So it's brilliant. Yeah, you can find someone that likes app menus and ask them what it's all about. But we do it like that, which is good. And we also have gmenu integration if you like the other thing, which shall not be named, with a schismatic name. Then we integrate with that, which is great. Thanks. Canonical did some good work there to integrate that, I think, under contract, which is cool. Even more. What, Colin, go for it. Let me switch back, and you can tell me what the app menus are good for. Come on. Actually, we integrate with OSX already.
Okay.
Perfectly.
So there's no side benefits.
Quailon did the work. Quailon, over to you. So the question was, is it going to give us a side benefit on OSX? And the answer is?
We had the Mac app menu done already, so I guess we use the existing Mac app menu entries for GTK. So
Got it. Okay, so there's code shared.
That's synergy, man.
So the thing was with the Mac, the way we were doing it in the Mac was that we were using the actual widget, but in Linux, that's a good idea.
Two, yeah.
And so
you
have to do
that's for your
So it's all a mess, and one of the big points of the mess is this GTK 2, GTK 3 bifurcation, and you know the sheer amount of work to make it use GTK 3, which is quite staggering. And I mean there is a GTK 3 backend, but there are a number of problems with it, and some of them are by design. So I'll talk a bit about those. But let's look on the positive side first. So the question is, if we want to use GTK 3 properly, how can we do it? And so thanks to this relatively short list of people who after 2.5 years of work are only halfway through the problem, we have nearly converted, you know, all of our dialogues to a new GTK builder-based, glade-editable, sexy, layoutable new infrastructure, which is cool. And Quaylon's really led the way in the, I think, probably third attempt to do this that actually succeeded, which is very impressive. And the good news is that hopefully when we have this in place, we can start to move dialogues optionally, if you're running GNOME or you want GTK 3 or whatever, to actually use native widgets. And once you do that, the GTK 3 port becomes significantly easier. So currently, the problem with the GTK 3 port is that you need to be able to draw all of these guys themed using GTK themes, right? And my expectation of GTK 3 as a naive positivist was there was lots of effort being put into theming design, and this is all being redesigned, and it was all going to be beautiful, and it will all be easy to use, and it will be awesome. And unfortunately, that whilst much of the redesigning is true, the end result was not actually usable for what we want, which is a great shame. So there are many reasons for that. One is that we like to grope a whole load of colors out of the system to work out what a good color is to render something in. Right, you know, it's going to be a note on the side of thing, or a surround, or a bevels, or all this sort of thing. So you can theme the colors, and we want to be a chameleon and hide in the operating system. The problem is that CSS fundamentally doesn't let you do that, because you have these random colors that could change or have time varying magic in them. And so, at least in the abstract, it's basically not possible. And that's before you get all of these animated effects. You know, so when you move your mouse in, or it focuses, it goes gray, or when it, I don't know. This is a whole load of funky things that can be done that we can't really do easily in LibreOffice to keep up with that, which is a shame. So we're pretty much stuck with GTK 2, and despite my best efforts to encourage people to do GTK 3 work, they inevitably spend lots of time heavy lifting fixing the theming for GTK 2. And you know, the volunteers that we have spend their time doing that, making it, you know, actually not suck for whatever the latest theme breakage is. So I mean, I guess the hope then, the great white hope, is actually finishing this dialog migration, which is going really a lot quicker now, I think. Is that right, Quillen?
Yeah, it's going.
It's going pretty well. So optimistically, in another 2 years, hopefully we'll be done, by which time GTK 4 will be a real possibility. And then we'll be, then we'll be happy. So anyhow, that's the state of where it's at the moment. The good news is that you can't really tell, and that there's, you know, a good number of apps still using GTK 2, I hope. For various reasons. And so the theming, I hope, matches. And we don't look too awful. So that's blathering about that. Perfect. So this is a crazy idea I have, LibreOffice, trying to make LibreOffice actually reusable. So we have a gigantic scripting and, you know, remote control API surface that sadly is frequently not actually used. And I think quite a lot of the problem is that it's quite difficult to get LibreOffice to the point that you can do that. So there are odd libraries you need to link. There's quite a lot of code around the place. You need to bootstrap it in relatively unpleasant ways. But then you can do some really powerful stuff. So the question is, how can we get the really powerful stuff and make it easier to use and make programmers less scared of doing that? And at least, well, this is an attempt that I'm looking into. So the idea is that you have a tiny static library. The static library basically serves only to dlopen, find LibreOffice, dlopen it, and hook a single virtual entry point out. And then you have a large number of abstract interfaces, so you're actually compiling almost nothing into your app. It's all being sucked out of LibreOffice itself, and then you can do funky things with it. So in this case, you can load documents and, you know, save them and format shift them and that kind of thing. And which is kind of cool. If you read how GNOME Documents is currently rendering, you know, spreadsheets, for example, it spawns a Python script called unoconv, which forks a LibreOffice instance in a headless mode that completely starts up, loads the document, saves it out as PDF, and then tears itself down again. And so there's some significant cost to doing that. You know, wouldn't it be better if we could just persuade people to link to LibreOffice, right? You know, suck it into the process and see what happens. So that's basically where I'm trying to encourage people to go. And I think that it, you know, it sounds a bit mad, but I think we can make it work. And it should be quicker and better. Hopefully, we can also ultimately in documents avoid rendering to PDF and then loading it again in events and then re-rendering it, which is one of those quite odd things. So I'm eager to have a tiled renderer inside documents that will present a whole load of pixels and move them around as textures very quickly, so you can pan and read documents in a very smooth way, like people are used to on their mobile devices. And have that driven by LibreOffice in the back end, in perhaps even a separate thread. So here's another cool thing. We have this library called libcmis, thank you, which stands for the Content Management Interoperability Services, is a new standard. And it's actually implemented, which is encouraging. It's one of the, you know, often there are multiple standards that no one implements, or there's just complete warfare in the standards sphere, as you get in document formats. You know, there are two standards, and that's how it's going to be. Maybe there'll be another one at some stage. But CMIS actually appears to be implemented by Microsoft, by IBM, by SAP, by Alfresco, by all of these guys, which is kind of cool. And so if you have a document management system somewhere, you can talk to it. We also have a Google Docs support for it. Obviously, that's not CMIS, but it's in the same behind the same abstraction. And there's a little standalone library called libcmis. Who would have thought? And you can check it out there. We have a prototype GVFS backend, so it integrates into GNOME. So this is kind of LibreOffice innovation going the other way, which is always nice. And we have a photograph of it here, actually, with Nautilus connecting to an Alfresco server and browsing that and fiddling around with that. Of course, that could easily be a SharePoint server, and IBM server, you know, any other kind of crazy CMIS thing. So there's some work that's needed there to finish it, because this was a Hack Week project that never quite got finished. But it already does some useful stuff, so it would be great to get that done and packaged up and in widespread use. So that was my talk, pretty much. Here are the conclusions. Conclusions is, LibreOffice is cool. It's getting better, and it's growing, and we're actually executing. We're trying to make this code base something you can be proud of, that you can recommend to your friends in confidence, and look forward to the next release of in a positive way. We work well with GNOME. Obviously, we always want to work better with all of our platforms, and we'd love contributions there. We have big plans, but small numbers of hackers. You know, it sounds like a lot when you look at the graph, but the reality is, you know, people are always welcome, and new people can make a big difference. And finally, yeah, I mean, just thank you for your support. You know, you are here. You are backing it. Thank you for supporting LibreOffice and making it what it is, because we couldn't do it without our, not just users, but the people who, you know, back us up and help us prove the power of freedom and free software. So, yeah, please get involved. Help us. And thank you for your patience. You've been very good. We have 5 minutes for questions. Perfect. Are there actually any? My experience is if someone asks a question, then someone else will. I don't know why that is, but you see, we now have questions. What's that? Why is that? I don't know. It's one of those
things. Is that?
Why is that? Perfect, you see? I think it's we need a social psychologist to tell us the answer to that question. But I'm betting now that someone else will answer a question. You see, it's Scott, you know? I knew it. I think it probably breaks the ice, Colin. We need someone brave, you know, to give permission for questions.
Documentation. What work is going on there for like online, for like interactive help and tutorials, those kind of things for basic features? And
yeah. So tutorials for programmers or for users or for...
For users.
For users. So we have a significantly large chunk of help. So it does tell you some useful things. I think it primarily exists to frustrate translators because it is so large. The other problem is it's really not very small, the amount of help we have, because there are really a lot of features. And so we don't actually distribute that when you download LibreOffice, typically. So we have a wiki help. So when you look for help, it sends your language and what you're looking at to the wiki thing. And then with a following wind, you get the right help page, which is kind of nice. That lets us then, in 150 megabytes, distribute every single translation that we have, which means we're not discriminating against, well, insert minority language group. Let's pick on the Welsh, right? So the Welsh translation is in there, right? And that's important to those guys. And so it should be. So yeah, we don't distribute help translated into 150 languages because that would, you know, just sort of sink the ship. But if you do want to, you can download it separately on Windows and install it. Does that help? No pun intended. Or was a more specific question, like, why is the help not good enough? Or why is it not bigger and more verbose? Or, I think there's some good questions there. So the other thing is that we were thinking of having a wiki to translate, to extend the help, so anyone could extend it and improve it, you know, like a Wikipedia-style thing. And we thought that would be awesome and what everyone would want, and then we could do the reverse. You know, we could pack the wiki up into a small blob and let you download it if you want it offline. Turns out translators didn't want that, and they were scared that there would be something in one language that wasn't in another language, and in some locations you have to have 100% translation, and that's really unclear. You know, like tracking who added what and edited what in each language and whether it was truly a translation of something else and so on is kind of a hard problem. So, yeah. So it's a shame. But another question, if we have one. Ah, Colin, you have a serious question. That's good.
So as a large, complex application, Firefox has a lot of work on extracting like performance, telemetry, and stuff like that. I saw a recent post from Lenito about this. But yeah, how far along is that sort of stuff for you guys?
Lionel will be able to tell you. He's standing immediately behind. Clearly we do a lot of work on performance. The most promising performance thing I've seen is the CallGrind Tinderbox that essentially runs a number of tests under CallGrind. And the reason is that gives you timings that are plus or minus 0.01%, pretty much. So, you know, if you didn't break it, it's completely flat. If you did, suddenly you see a step, and you can see that versus the git commit, which is kind of nice. We're still working on actually making that more reliable and you know, putting it into production. In terms of telemetry, so what you have to understand about Mozilla is that although they have a third of the market, they have like 300 full-time paid people working on that project, you know? And we have 30 tops. So our ability to go away and invest a whole, you know, team of five people for 3 years on performance improvement is practically nil. So prior to every release, there is kind of a panic. You know, did we have a massive performance regression? And you know, yours truly goes away and profiles it, and it turns out that we, you know, there's always something, right? And so then me and Stefan, you know, fanny about trying to fix, you know, whatever's happening, and then hopefully we ship something that, you know, is either better or not worse. I mean, that's the reality of what happens. And we'd love to improve that. You know, if you have good ideas, you know, there are a lot of charting things. The unfortunate thing about Lenido thing is that you have to run Chrome in order to render the results. And I don't run Chrome or Chromium. So I'm sure it's very cool, but I can't see it for myself. So that's a shame. Lionel, tell us good things
about
it.
Just to answer also, so basically for those who don't know, we at Lenido worked on integrating the Chromium profile viewer, performance viewer, with LibreOffice. But the good thing is that there is a standalone viewer which can be integrated in LibreOffice. So the final goal is to be able to basically, for anybody without any knowledge of programming, to launch the through a hidden option, to launch the profiler, then to do what he wants to do, and then to have all the
data there.
I mean, with a special build, of course.
So the people at Mozilla are actually cool. You know, if you talk to Taras Gleck, for example, who leads the performance team at Mozilla, he's awesome. You know, and they've got all this good infrastructure, and we should clearly reuse it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's just a matter of, you know, doing it or using the Chrome version, or if it's better, whatever. And so there's loads of things we want to steal from there in terms of low-hanging fruit. You know, like the online transparent updating on Windows would be nice. You know, like you're at the next version and you didn't even know it. You know, this sort of thing. But one day.
I have a question also, but it's outside the context of the talk, so feel free to say, okay, don't talk about
how rude is it, you know?
My question is, what's the status of LibreOffice online?
LibreOffice online, it's pretty much where it was last year, which is why I didn't bother showing it you. It sort of works. It, you know, relies on GTK3 in Broadway, but as I might have mentioned, the GTK3 port is not in itself very perfect at the moment. So, yeah. I mean, there is a prototype. You know, we could run it here. I could clone monitors or whatever and show you. But yeah, it's not something I'm handing to the inexperienced user, you know. So yeah, things need wrapping around it. There's a couple hundred thousand dollars worth of work, and it's usable. That's my take. But the question is, you know, we need to find a sofa that's been discarded accidentally with someone's life savings in it, and then we'll just do it. So, good questions. Are we out of time? What's the
more or less, yeah.
More or less, yeah. Thank you again. It's been great seeing you. Thank you.